Welcome to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up on today's program.
We care a lot about people, and yet we've always been kind of on the fringe.
We wanted to understand the revenue potential. So what are we talking about in terms of statewide revenue impacts? What are we talking about in terms of tax revenue for cities? At the time,
the police still aren't commenting on this case because it's ongoing. This was serious business. And while, yes, this was an extreme situation, it was but the culmination of 7 years dealing with this short-term rental next door to me.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente at kp.org, Lane Community College at lanecc.edu, Peace Health at peacehealth.org, and the University of Oregon at uoregon.edu.
Lane County and the City of Eugene.
And here is today's program.
Welcome to the City Club of Eugene's March 6, 2020 program, Short-Term Rentals, Good are bad for Eugene. This is the 23rd program of our 2019-2020 programming year. My name is Eric Richardson and I serve as the City Club President. Support for the City Club is provided by our members and sponsors. You too can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. Without any further ado, I'd like to bring today's program coordinator to the mic. Please welcome John Belcher.
Thank you, Eric. Eugene frequently shows up as on top places list, and two recent ones are directly related to today's program. Last October, Airbnb posted their top 20 locations to visit. Eugene was number 7 overall in the world and number 2 in the U.S., with a 213% increase in bookings between 2019 and 2020. In January 2017, Realtor.com also listed Eugene as their number 2. This time, it was the second most constrained housing market in the U.S. Is there a correlation between these two figures? That's one of the questions. Does it make this topic of short-term rentals one of high interest and high controversy, and why we bring this issue to you today? Let's start with some background. Short-term rentals, typically either Airbnb, VRBO, which is vacation rental by owner, and Home2Go, are becoming a popular way for folks to stay on vacations, place to stay on vacations, short business trips, or to temporarily relocate when they're moving to a new location. The same is true in Eugene, with many folks supplementing income by renting out a spare room or two, or even entire homes to guests. Short-term rentals also supplement the capacity of hotels and motels, especially during large events such as university sports events, and may be a crucial source of beds for over 50,000 participants, media, and visitors expected to come during the 2021 World Track and Field Championships. It's estimated that there are over 1,000 active short-term rentals in our community. Providers are currently required to pay 4.5% transient room tax for their guests to the city, but unlike most Oregon cities, there are few other requirements to operate short-term rentals. Some individuals have raised concerns that some hosts are inconsiderate neighbors, generating noise and parking problems for those who live near them. Others have raised concerns that short-term rentals remove capacity from long-term rental market, a resource already facing severe capacity issues, as I mentioned earlier. Responding to these concerns, Eugene City Council has formed an ad hoc committee to review the issue and make recommendations for changes in city policy. That committee is composed of owner-occupied and non-owner-occupied short-term rental operators, housing advocates, impacted neighbors, and special interest groups with a charge to report back recommendations to council before the 2020 spring break, which is coming up. Today, we are going to bring 4 knowledgeable individuals with different perspectives to discuss their experience and knowledge on the subject of short-term rentals in our community. First, we will hear from Catherine Dunn, who is a realtor and a member of the Eugene Short-Term Rentals Association. She's been a real estate investor for the past 20 years and owns many long-term rentals as well as 2 short-term rentals. She will describe the general market and benefits of short-term rentals to our community. Bruce Seal and his wife have been operating a very successful Airbnb for 4.5 years as an important part of their family income. Bruce is also involved in music production and portrait photography. He will speak to his experience operating his Airbnb. Dr. Rebecca Lewis is Associate Professor in Planning, Public Policy, and Management at the University of Oregon. Her student, Sadie DiNatale, am I close? Published Assessing and Responding to Short-Term Rentals in Oregon, Enabling the Benefits of the Sharing Economy. Dr. Lewis will summarize what is known about the short-term rental market in Oregon and in Eugene specifically. And then JoJo Jensen is a professional voice talent, not necessarily a doctor, who records from her studio in the Laurel Hill Valley. She has been dealing with issues created by an adjacent Airbnb over the past 7 years, most recently having several Eugene police officers responding to behaviors during a weekend party a few weeks ago. So, this should be interesting. Let's begin with Ms. Dunn.
Good afternoon. I'm Catherine Dunn. Nice to talk to all of your bright, shiny faces today. A little bit more about me. Thank you for the nice introduction, but I do want to go a little bit further, just so you know a little bit more about who I am. Just so you know why should you listen to me? Well, I'm a Eugene native. I'm also a University of Oregon graduate in the School of Journalism. I have a master's degree in human communication. I'm a realtor with the Carandy and Dunn team at Keller Williams Realty, Eugene Springfield, and I, as John said, I am a real estate investor. I have two short-term rentals. They are both non-owner occupied in multifamily buildings. So one is in one unit of an apartment building, a 7-unit apartment building, and the other is on one side of a duplex. I also have 29 long-term rentals. That's my retirement plan, my rentals. I'm a member, as John mentioned, of the Eugene Short-Term Rentals Association. So as a realtor, what I want to do is start with property rights. I talk about that. The U.S. Constitution gives us all the right to own property, which includes all legitimate uses of that property. And that gives the property value. When government eliminates an owner's use, it takes away value, and this can be considered a regulatory taking, which the owner should be compensated for. I'm bringing this up because of non-owner occupied properties. People are wanting to ban them. The right of a use ends when it encroaches on others' property rights. The burden is on those who complain to show how the owner's use of that property takes something away that they own free and clear. So up to this time, no one has really shown that STRs, short-term rentals, are taking away anything that they own free and clear. So what are short-term rentals? These are properties that are rented for less than 30 days. They're furnished rooms or houses for guests with unique needs. They have multiple bedrooms, some of them do, kitchens, yards, laundry areas, garages. And these are great for families with children or pets, or they have special needs, including dietary restrictions with that kitchen. And they can select just the right location near family, friends, or their activities that they want to enjoy. They're affordable. There are STRs in every price category or budget. And the STR host qualifies guests and immaculately maintains a home to give guests a safe and enjoyable experience. And they want to also have an enjoyable experience too, the owner does, and they want the neighbors to have an enjoyable experience too. And that's why they qualify the guests very carefully. It's a top priority. Short-term rentals are a legal use of residential property in Eugene. We pay the same transit room tax that hotels do, 11.3%, 4.5% of that goes to Eugene. STRs are not hotels or bed and breakfasts. We don't have restaurants. We're not a commercial building with 24-hour staff or the need for security because we have a lot of people in the building or extra safety measures. In fact, short-term rentals are exactly the same as a long-term rental, except for the length of stay. Now, in some STRs can go back and forth between long-term rentals and short-term rentals. Like, for example, we might have somebody that comes to stay in our short-term rental for 30 days or more. An example would be traveling nurses or temporary employees that are working in Eugene. So they are used sometimes for long-term reasons and sometimes for short-term reasons. Short-term rentals are being unfairly criticized. Many Eugene citizens, the city council, and the city's ad hoc committee are recommending regulations before they have even fully examined the facts. In fact, there haven't been very many facts even brought out. There are three common complaints we hear most often. STRs impact Eugene's housing shortage. There's a rise in STRs, and out-of-area buyers are coming in, and they disturb neighborhood livability. It's wrong to consider regulations based on complaints, but no facts. Complaints or opinions may not be reality. So let's take number one. Are STRs impacting housing in Eugene? Well, there are 70,469 total housing units. Of that, there are 33,600 long-term rentals and 841 short-term rentals, just 1.2% of all housing. Of the 841 short-term rentals, 337 of them are private rooms, and likely in an occupied house, and 460 are listed as entire homes. However, 38% of those were found to be very part-time, seasonal, or had 0 to 3 reviews in the year 2019. Now, this data about STRs was conducted by the Sisson Kovash Group, who are part of the Short-Term Rental Association, because this data doesn't exist. It doesn't exist anywhere for Eugene proper. It does exist on AirDNA for greater Eugene area, and that number shows that 902 STRs are in the greater Eugene area. So 902, 841, it correlates. We're just looking at Eugene proper. So if we take that 38% of very part-time off of the 841, we get down to 285 rentable housing units. These could be long-term rentals if the owner decided they wanted to put them back on the market. That's 0.4% of our total housing. Now, I'm not on the city council, but if I were, I would look at that number of 285 short-term rentals, 0.4%, and I'd think, this doesn't look like it's impacting our housing shortage. So what is? Well, the city council knows because in January 2019, they received a report from their staff entitled the Eugene Housing Tools Strategies Evaluation. And this report had one big clear recommendation that the city should build lots more affordable housing, which means that rents need to be below $650 per month. That qualifies as affordable housing. And it recommended three ways to do that, three top ways. Build small multifamily units, duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes. They're less costly to build, so rents can be lower. Remove the barriers to building ADUs. The city increased restrictions in 2014, and now, on average, we only permit 2 ADUs per year. Before that, it was 9, so we need to loosen these restrictions. And then consider implementing a construction excise tax. Short-term rentals, if they were put back on the housing market as long-term rentals, they would likely not rent below $650 because they're so fixed up. They're immaculate properties. Some might, but most of them would not. So another thing that this report found is that in Eugene, of all households, 51% are renters and 49% of homeowners, so half and half. 58% of those renters are rent burdened, and 36% are severely rent burdened. Rent burden means that they pay more than 30% of their income toward housing. On the other side, homeowners, similar percentage are mortgage burdened. So banning short-term rentals would financially impact all owners and help very few, if any, renters. So the city does need to loosen restrictions and build more housing. Now, of those 841 short-term rental hosts, who are we? Well, we're your neighbors. And we're educated, we're hardworking people, we're resourceful, and we're working toward financial freedom. Many of the short-term rental hosts need their property they need help with their mortgages. Remember, we're part of us are actually mortgage burdened. We're attorneys, we're moms, we're artists, we're teachers, we're real estate agents, engineers, and retirees. In fact, retirees are the number one fastest growing segment of short-term rental homes in America, age 60 plus. We rely on short-term rentals to pay our mortgages, fund retirement, put kids through college, and work part-time in order to stay home with kids and volunteer in other parts of our lives for the city of Eugene. Are they significantly increasing? No, since 2016, they've stayed pretty stable. There was a little dip there when they weren't paying TRT taxes, but then it leveled out. So 2016 through 2019, it's pretty steady. 85% of owners live in Eugene. 82% of hosts have one short-term rental. So are short-term rentals affecting livability? We get common complaints. One, I don't know my neighbors. There's vacant houses in my neighborhood, parking issues, parties, noise. These complaints aren't exclusive to short-term rentals. This is life. Let's say there were no short-term rentals. Is this including his time too? Okay, that's what I'm doing. Let's say that there were no short-term rentals. None. Would we still have neighbors we don't know? Yes. Would there still be parking issues? Yeah. Would there still be vacant houses? Yes, there would. There's two in my neighborhood right now, and we don't even have a short-term rental. Would we still have parties or noise? We sure would when people have parties at their house. We have a party in our neighborhood every single week. Probably more, and we do not have short-term rentals. So these complaints aren't exclusive to short-term rentals. It's life. And Eugene already has police, parking, and noise ordinances. When life gets out of hand, we have somebody we can call. So let's focus on the benefits of short-term rentals. They produce additional tax revenues for Eugene. In 2019, our TRT taxes to Eugene was $352,706. It improves the appearances of our neighborhoods. Would you rather have a short-term rental that's immaculate or a long-term rental that dilapidates over time? And that is actually improving our home values to have our properties improved. They help residents and local businesses financially. We pay living wages to our housekeepers, our contractors, our landscapers, and more. We generate income for local businesses. We actually refer business to local establishments that we like spas and restaurants and retail establishments. We provide needed housing for Eugene's major events. What would they do without us? In fact, on the Eugene's own website about the 2021 World Games, the question is, where will visitors and athletes stay during the event? Airbnb is actually posted that we will be part of the housing solution. We don't have enough hotels. So to sum it up, any short-term rental regulations would be unduly burdensome because they shift the entire blame or burden of Eugene's housing and neighborhood complaints to a very small group of short-term rental owners who are just trying to get ahead. It simply isn't fair, it's not reasonable, or legal. We propose that we work together to create solutions based on facts. We wanna work with the neighborhoods, we wanna work with the people who are complaining, we wanna come up with solutions, we're your neighbors. But let's work on them with facts. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Bruce Searle. My wife and I have been Airbnb hosts for almost 5 years. I believe that someone stole some of my minutes, so I'm gonna have to whirl through this as quickly as I can. Jennifer and I have been, we were born and raised here. We were youth pastors, adult pastors, worship pastors, youth workers for all of our married lives. And we had kids in the school system at Churchill and volunteer at Churchill, and we still do today, even though they're gone, we're still over there investing time and chaperoning trips and stuff. We care about people. We've cared so much about people that when we've had people that we've known that didn't have enough money to have their own apartment, their own place, their own house, we've let them come in and live with us, sometimes in two cases for 10 years at a time. And another case, there was a teenage boy that didn't have a place that was safe for him to live in. We were gonna take him for a week and it turned into two, which then of course turned into 3 years. So it's not that we don't care about people, we care a lot about people. And yet we've always been kind of on the fringe of making ends meet under the poverty level and just barely making it. Airbnb has changed our lives. We took my dad's retirement, I mean his inheritance, and I spent a year building, fixing up our little backyard cottage thing so that we could rent it on Airbnb. And we've finally been able to pay our bills. We've finally been able to give money to charity more than we've ever thought we could. We've finally been able to take our kids out to lunch or to dinner sometimes, or go to lunch or dinner ourselves sometimes, be able to buy clothes for our kids. The difference between being an Airbnb host and not being an Airbnb host for us has been life and death. We would have lost our house by now had it not been for Airbnb. So you might say, well, what kind of neighborhood, you know, do we have? Well, we've had over 1,750 bookings in our little cottage. It's one of the top wish-listed places to stay in Eugene. And we've had over 850 five-star reviews, where they're pretty much all five stars. We've had zero problems in our neighborhood. Our neighbors are happy. Our one neighbor says, if you ever need help cleaning because you got to be out of town, let me know. I'll come help clean. Our other neighbor is a policeman. He watches like a hawk, and he's armed. And he's like, he's good. He said, at first I thought maybe this would be, but it's fine. This is fine. And so we want to be good neighbors. And I know that JoJo is going to share some horror stories, and I my heart goes out to her. And I want to work with her and anybody to help, you know, mitigate that. But what I do want you to leave with is this, and I'm cutting out most of everything that I have to say so for time, is that Airbnb allows us to finally be part of Eugene. And it's horrifyingly scary to think that the city might somehow take that away. It's meant everything for us. We don't have a retirement. We don't have a way to stay in our house if we don't make some income through, we do six different jobs already. And this allows us to do that. Thanks for your time.
Before we proceed, I'd like to recognize our gold sponsors, Evan Elder, Brown and Schubert, Homes for Good, Gatos, Churnside and Balthrop, Attorneys at Law, and our Sapphire sponsor, AARP of Oregon. AARP of Oregon celebrates creating livable communities for all ages. Learn more at aarp.org/Oregon.
You're listening to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene. Now back to the program.
Thank you for having me today. I'm Rebecca Lewis. I'm a professor at the University of Oregon and the co-director of research for the Institute for Policy Research and Engagement. Today I'm going to be talking about a study that I started a few years ago in 2017 with a student, Sadie, who since graduated, now works at Echo Northwest in Portland, and Bob Parker at our institute as well. So the study was predominantly focused on small cities in Oregon, which does not include Eugene. But the findings of the study are relevant because we did a survey of the state to understand how other cities are addressing this. We have more of a picture of the data of what this looks like in other cities. A lot of them more vacation-oriented resort communities. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of what we found today across the state, and I want to center in on the regulatory approaches to talk a little bit about what other cities are doing to address this and some of the menu of options that exist. So as Catherine mentioned earlier, it's really hard to regulate something you don't have data about. And so the first thing we wanted to do in the study was understand what the prevalence and characteristics of these things are, because they differ a lot. There's a big difference between what you just heard about versus something that's owned by an out-of-state investor. The person never has lived in the property or seen it. And you can get a better sense of that when you start to dig into these data. So we wanted to understand the prevalence and characteristics of short-term rentals. We wanted to understand the revenue potential. So what are we talking about in terms of statewide revenue impacts? What are we talking about in terms of tax revenue for cities? At the time, it wasn't mandated that Airbnb collect revenue from all cities, and they weren't doing it. They're actually still not doing it. But at the time, we really wanted to understand what this could mean in terms of revenue. We also wanted to dig deeper into this question of constraint. It's a really difficult question to answer empirically, but I'll tell you how we approached it. And then finally, we did a survey of all cities in the state where we asked about perceptions from city staff. So So what are you hearing from residents? What are you hearing from elected officials? What are you hearing from business owners? And what are you hearing from residents? To try to understand what's going on and to further understand how they're regulating. So I'm not going to talk too much about data sources. We used AirDNA, which Catherine mentioned earlier. It's imperfect, but it's one of the sort of most comprehensive sources that exists. I also want to point out that it's a lot easier to get data on Airbnb than it is to get data on all the other platforms, and there are many other platforms out there. So this is a snapshot, but it's not a comprehensive picture. We use some national level data from the American Community Survey, some data at the state level, and one of our data sources, as I've mentioned, is the survey that we conducted to planning directors and through the League of Oregon Cities website. We ended up getting about a 40% response rate across the state. That survey focused, as I mentioned, on perceptions, on the perceived positive and negative impacts of short-term rentals, and then centered in on these aspects of regulation. How are they defined? How are they regulated? How effective are those existing regulations? And are they intending to start regulating in the future? So I'm going to start by giving a little bit of portrait of what this looks like statewide. From the data that Catherine presented, it doesn't sound like it's very different in Eugene versus the rest of the state. So across the state, about 38% of rentals are entire home and rented more than 30 days a year. You can start to see that when you look at those that are rented more than 90 days a year, so ones that are sort of permanent Airbnbs, it's about 17% that are whole home and rented for this longer period of time. The reason I want to show you these data is that there's a lot of variation about what these units look like, and it's not the same for every single Airbnb. That's also clear in the revenue data. The most short-term rentals earn less than $10,000 in a given year, and 40% of all actually earn less than $600 a year. So there's a lot that are really posting their home for a couple weekends or a couple weeks a year. They're not doing this sort of on a sort of annual cycle, and that's important to understand as we think about what these things look like. Looking at some of the regional data, the main thing I want to point out from this slide is, again, omitting the four biggest cities in the state, Airbnbs are bringing in $82 million in revenue and have a sort of a huge tax potential, both through the state levy and through the local levies. So, as I mentioned earlier, one of the things we were really interested in was how this might impact housing supply. It's a really difficult question to answer empirically, as I mentioned. So we looked at it two different ways. We looked at it a similar way to what Catherine presented earlier, where we looked at the percentage of total housing stock. We also compared what you could generate from an Airbnb versus what you can generate from a short-term rental to understand where are places where it pencils out more to put your home on Airbnb than it would to rent it long term. And of all the cities in the state we looked at, there were 15 cities for which more than 5% of the housing stock is on one of these platforms. Those are mostly retirement communities, Bend, Manzanita, Seaside, Sisters, so on. And there are seven cities for which the revenue you earn from a short-term rental on average exceeds the revenue you would earn from a long-term rental on average. So there's only a few places, again, in the state where this pencils out. One point I want to make is that we don't know whether these were always vacation rentals and they started using the Airbnb platform or whether they were new rentals. We did a little bit of deeper dive into that in the paper. I'm not going to talk a ton about that today. But our perception of this is you start to look at the percentage of the housing stock, you start to look at what the average income is, we can start to understand how this might impact housing affordability. I'm going to pivot now to talking about the perceptions of what we heard from the survey. So generally, residents had mixed perceptions about short-term rentals. Some saw positive benefits and some saw negative. One thing I want to note is that in a lot of small rural towns, these were seen as really positive because they were seen as really expanding the tourism sector, offering somewhere for people to stay when they visit communities when there are no hotels. So in some places, they want to encourage and they want to facilitate these as much as possible. Other cities have a lot more issues, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. Generally, elected officials and businesses saw these as less problematic based on our survey. the benefits that the respondents saw generating tax revenue and supporting tourism were the main ones. But the negative impacts that were the sort of complaints that were heard had to do with things like parking, had to do with things like noise complaints, and so on. And a pretty high share noted that they had heard complaints about these. About half of the respondents noted that they had heard nuisance complaints in the last 5 years. So we also asked about regulations. These are generally referred to as transient rental or vacation rentals. They're generally defined as units that are rented less than 30 days. And about 35% of cities across the state are regulating for these. One interesting thing, again, we're looking at small cities. Some of these places have been regulating for these for 20 or 30 years because they're coastal communities and they were seeing impacts of these decades ago. So this is not something new that other cities haven't dealt with. This is something that other communities have lots of sort of experience dealing with. And really, like the city of Bandon, for example, has a really nuanced approach to addressing this. So most regulations are around permitting, and some of these are around taxation. Respondents also commonly regulate through concentration caps, limits, or occupancy requirements. So talking about what neighborhoods they're allowed in, limiting the number that are allowed on certain streets, those sorts of things are fairly common. Again, this is in Oregon and small cities. Short-term rentals were commonly enforced by issuances of administrative citations and fines. We also wanted to get at whether cities felt like they were effective at addressing short-term rentals. So the cities that are regulating generally see themselves as more effective than the cities that are not regulating. Most of them have no idea, particularly the ones that aren't regulating. But this is sort of interesting. Regulating helps you understand what the impacts are and helps you regulate for those. I'm not going to talk a ton about these different options. We detail this further in our report, but there's a vast menu of different types of options that exist in terms of regulation that go from something as simple as requiring registration for ones that are rented more than 10 days a year to really complicated approaches to thinking about caps and concentrations. So some of our policy recommendations, I'm going to have to wrap up so that I can let JoJo speak. Some of our policy recommendations get at the importance of legally defining this, codifying it with a local ordinance, levying taxes, which already exists in Eugene, and requiring registration. So I'm going to have to go through the conclusions fairly quickly, but the recommendations I want to make are it's important to collect and monitor data to be able to understand what's going on. Defining short-term rentals by ordinance helps regulate, and it's important for the community to decide what impacts are most concerning and regulate around that. There are a vast menu of options that exist that other cities have tried that we can learn from. So thank you for your time.
I'm JoJo Jensen, and I've lived next to a short-term rental for 7 years. And while Catherine and Rebecca talked about data, I'm going to talk about feelings. Don't groan. Specifically, I'm going to talk about what it feels like to live next to a full-time, non-owner-occupied short-term rental. It feels unsafe. At 10:40 p.m. on January 11th, a Saturday night, I called the police about the short-term rental next door to me because a huge party was underway. Swarms of kids were already screaming and yelling, and cars clogged up the streets and our cul-de-sac. Within 20 minutes of calling, the cops were everywhere. Cop cars blocked the west end of Augusta Street, and they didn't let anybody leave, neighbors or partygoers. It was surprising that the police came so fast, and honestly, that they came at all. But the Eugene Police Department had a tip down from the Portland Police Bureau that bad actors were coming to town, and they were renting the short-term rental next to me. The police found guns, drugs, more than 60 people, along with known gang members who were involved with drug trafficking. The police still aren't commenting on this case because it's ongoing. This was serious business. And while, yes, this was an extreme situation, it was but the culmination of 7 years dealing with this short-term rental next door to me. So here's what it feels like to live next to a short-term rental every day for 7 years.
It's hypervigilance. Looking out my window when I hear a car door slam to see another unknown vehicle arrive next door. Will these people be noisy, drunk, high? Will these people tell me to mind my own business, only far less politely, or threaten me when I tell them to be quiet because I want to get some sleep? It's dread of every weekend, wondering whether this next batch of people are going to disrupt our quiet neighborhood. Drunk dudes after football games, or college kids who have now realized that they can rent an entire house to throw a party. It's shock when I go get my mail and the owner of the house yells at me to quit calling the city and complain, or he's gonna sue me for ruining his business, even though he has never once taken responsibility for his actions. It's exhaustion. After guests disrupt life again and again, and the host does nothing. The owner was never around. He collected the money, but he never did a thing to stop the damage that people on his property were doing to our neighborhood. It's disbelief when a mother of a U of O graduate informs us that they'll continue to have the party for their kid as the night wears on. And when asked how she would feel if this happened in her neighborhood, she said, "This would never happen in my neighborhood." Seriously. It's terror, wondering if the criminals fleeing from the Airbnb are going to break into your house and harm your kids. It's hopelessness, feeling alone because the city council, and the police won't help. Compliance can only work with the codes that they already have. City council took far too long to even take an interest in this situation. And the police are understaffed, and noise complaints are understandably low on their list of priorities. It's powerlessness, knowing that the bad behavior of the guests next door will happen again tomorrow or the next day, and there's nothing I can do about it. One of the things I never felt was enriched by the steady stream of people coming into our neighborhood. They were only there for a place to stay, they're not interested in becoming part of our community. Frankly, the only people being enriched are those making money from the disintegration of our neighborhoods. Living next to a full-time, non-owner-occupied short-term rental feels like we're losing the fabric of our neighborhood one thread at a time. Look, this isn't just about one bad STR owner. It's about how one house has changed our neighborhood. And even though the house next to me recently sold and my issue is finally resolved, I'm here now because I don't want this to happen to you or to anybody else in this city. And unless City Council creates some serious regulations regarding short-term rentals, I can tell you with 100% certainty that this will happen again, and maybe at a house near you. Thank you.
If you enjoyed the presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our Facebook page for more topics. We hope that you are inspired to join us for our next podcast episode.